Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. This episode of All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is sponsored by Gallery Nucleus, an art gallery and bookstore, where you can find prints, books, and other gifts from some of your favorite children's book illustrators, like John Clausen, Christian Robinson, and more. Gallery Nucleus is offering listeners 15% off your next purchase by entering in the promo code WONDER18. Visit gallerynucleus.com to discover more, and remember to use the code WONDER18. That's WONDER and the number 18. GalleryNucleus.com. Meet David Barclay Moore with a story that relays something larger than the moment. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 417 of the podcast with David Barclay Moore. The Stars Beneath Our Feet, David's debut middle grade novel, was my favorite middle grade novel of last year. Its powerful voice, visceral setting, and flawed characters made for a compelling story that I thought about long after I put down the book. Or, to be honest, long after I finished listening to the audiobook. You don't need to know the story to enjoy our conversation, but my guess is you'll want to add it to your TBR pile right away. And since it's a brand new year, this will be a powerful read to kick off a year of great books for sure. Here's episode number 417 of the podcast with David Barclay Moore. Welcome to the podcast, David Barclay Moore. I'm excited to talk to you tonight, man.
Thank you, Matthew. I really appreciate you having me on your podcast.
I want to say up front, just because I didn't say this to you before recording, but I want to tell you, thank you for writing The Stars Beneath Our Feet. Your book is gorgeous. I don't have a chance to read a whole lot of middle grade every year, so I always rely on my friends recommending stuff, and every friend that I mentioned this book to was like, oh my word, put it at the top of your list. And it didn't disappoint. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous book. And sort of blew my mind that it's your debut. What a great start out the gate. So really, awesome job, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate you having me on because I know you don't do a lot of middle grade.
It's like we were talking about before recording. It's because I'm such a slow reader. Lord, if all of you could just read your books to me, I'd listen to every one of them. I constantly listen to podcasts and am more than happy to substitute in middle grade and YA, but I'm such a slow reader. But I've also been told, and this was like my English major professors back in college said that slow readers are slow because they read every word. So I'm a person, you can value that I read every word. I savor every word you put down. How about that?
That sounds good to me. So you do a lot of the listening in your like commute, in your car, or how do you listen to the books?
You know, I don't, now that I'm being interviewed on our podcast.
Exactly. <yeah. laughs>
I don't watch TV. I don't watch stuff. So I just am listening all the time, and I do all primarily do all the chores around the house, the dishwashing and laundry and all that. So I sort of always have something going that I don't need to be thinking about too much. And I really love being immersed in story. I spend all day teaching children and talking about story and promoting stories, that it's really nice to come home and sort of restock my brain with other stories.
Yeah, I totally get that.
So yeah. Yeah, and audiobooks, unfortunately, are based a lot on performance too, aren't they? That if it's a weaker performance, it's hard to stick with the book. The story doesn't maybe shine the way that it could. But as we were saying again before recording, that I listen to Stars Beneath Our Feet primarily, and the audiobook is so good for it. Ah, so good.
Yeah, they did an excellent job with it, and the narrator Niall Bullock was great, you know. And one of the things with, you know, the audiobook that I had really wanted from the get-go is I really wanted a youthful voice to narrate The Stars Beneath Our Feet, because it's told, you know, from a place of youth with a youthful protagonist who's 12.
Right.
And you know, it was kind of hard, you know, to get someone like a 12-year-old.
I was just gonna say, right?
But he's not too far away from 12, the narrator for the audiobook. And so, yeah, I'm very, very happy with the job that he did.
Well, Niall did an amazing job. We're gonna talk all about Lolly, and we're gonna talk about Big Rose. We're talking about all these characters that I feel like I know because you so clearly envisioned them when you wrote your story. But first, why don't I give you a chance to introduce your story to the people listening that might not have read it yet.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's The Stars Beneath Our Feet. It's on Knopf. It came out September 19th. And on the cover, there's a boy, a 12-year-old African-American boy, walking down the street. And the street is paved with Legos, the Lego bricks, which I guess in reality would be extremely painful if you're walking down a street made of Lego. And he looks a little sad, so maybe it is painful, I don't know. But no, it's basically, it's a story about a very serious matter as far as processing grief and how we process grief in our lives and the loss of a loved one. And when we first encounter Lolly Rockpaul, who's the protagonist of my book, he's depressed and angry, you know, and he's mourning the loss of his brother, his older brother Jermaine, Jermaine was murdered in an act of gun violence. And so Lolly's dealing with that, and he's also dealing with these older boys in his neighborhood in Harlem, which is where the setting is, in Harlem in New York City. And these older boys are trying to force him to join basically a gang or a crew. And so that's kind of wearing him out. And so he, basically him and another friend start building in the community center where they live, in the public housing development. And they start building with Legos. And they actually build like a miniature city that would take up like maybe the space of a basketball court in real life. And throughout the process of that, building that little city, they're able to kind of work through a lot of their problems.
I love that it's even bigger than I imagined. Like I think I imagined up, and I didn't imagine out that far. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. I feel like by tying in Lego among many other things in this book, you add this like common language to an experience that might not be common for many readers. I know for me, this was a book that took me into an environment that I wasn't familiar with. And when that happens, at least for me as a reader, it really causes my senses to be on alert. I feel like I'm paying attention a lot more closely. I'm leaning in. And I found Lolly to be this really beautiful, multifaceted character that is struggling with the grief, the loss of his brother. But I feel like the way you wrote him is that in some ways, he almost doesn't even realize he's struggling with it as much as he is. And that caused me to reflect on how true that is of so many people, especially young people, that the way we process emotions sometimes having not had the experience with them, we don't quite have, maybe the word is the emotional maturity to sort of know how to handle it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I encountered a lot of that, working kind of within that population in Harlem. I worked at, the Harlem Children's Zone, which is a nonprofit in Harlem that, the anti-poverty profit, nonprofit.
Okay.
And, so I came in contact with a lot of, and it's a nonprofit that works with people in Harlem who live along the poverty line, particularly Black and Brown folk in Harlem. And so even though I'm from, you know, born and raised in Missouri and grew up very differently from Lolly, you know, I came into contact with a lot of young people who were dealing with a lot of that kind of trauma and kind of post-trauma, really just due to their lives and a lot of the kind of stressful situations that they had to deal with. And a lot of them, you know, I would always be surprised at how kind of buoyant and happy so many of them were.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course me being, you know, I worked in communications, you know, and I also taught and completely separately. I taught in Harlem too in a different, you know, school, right? But I would always be surprised when I would find out some of the issues that they were dealing with, like some of them dealing with some very heavy stuff, and yet they would still, you know, have this kind of buoyancy and affability.
I feel like that resilience of a child is something that, as a teacher, I always I find a lot of wonder in as well. That my students, often when you find out about some of the lives they live or some of the experiences they are going through, to know that they show up and find joy in their friends and can laugh and be lighthearted at times and then so often turn and just be vulnerable at others, is something I don't experience as an adult.
Yeah. And my character in the novel, you know, as you pointed out, at least at the beginning of the novel, he doesn't realize kind of how deep he's in.
Yeah.
Right. By the end of it, you know, he's grown quite a bit. You know, you kind of, you're able to see him grow and hear how he grows kind of in his own words, you know, cause he's the narrator. And, you know, he, like I said, is a different person. He's kind of graduates into a larger world, I think, by the end of the novel, you know. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with, I mean, well, you know, I really think that art, you know, has this great ability, you know, to heal. And that's not a new idea. It's a very old idea, you know, going back to Aristotle and probably before that, right? And so one of the things I did want to communicate, you know, it's a dense novel, there's lots of ideas in it, but I really did want to communicate the whole idea and the importance of art as a healing entity in our lives, you know, particularly for children who are dealing with very difficult challenges, you know, and it doesn't have to be a lot of the kind of dramatic challenges that Lolly and his friends face in my novel. It could be just very simple things that are your kids are dealing with, you know. But art heals, you know, it changes our brain chemistry, you know, it puts us in a different state so we can experience the world differently. And I think that's terribly important nowadays, when art is being cut out of so many different school programs.
Yeah. And for Lolly in your book to experience art alongside and in some cases in like camaraderie with another friend, with another person that becomes a friend, Big Rose, I thought was something really powerful too. The two sort of competing for space and building at times opposing city structures, and yet you find that in that they're building this respect for one another and understanding one another and understanding each other's voice as an artist and as an architect and as a storyteller.
Yeah. I mean, I like Rose a lot, my character in the novel. I won't call her Big Rose.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Might come and beat me up if I call her Big Rose.
I say that name so affectionately, and as I'm saying it, I'm like, that's probably unkind. Yeah.
Well, you're a lot nicer than some of the other people are to her in the novel, that's for sure.
Good Lord, you're but... right. Does that hurt? Hold on. Time out, just for a second. As an author, does that hurt you to have to do things like that to your characters? I know you love Rose because of how you write Rose. Does it hurt you to have... I mean, I know that this has to be her world in order to shape who she is. But you're the author. You have to write these things. You have to commit them to pen and paper for us. That's... Ow.
Yeah, I mean, and the short answer is it does on some levels. You know, it is painful. I forget which writer it was. They talk about creating characters and in art as you. It's sometimes it's like a little tiny deaths that happen. You know, when you do you kind of little bits of yourself that kind of you leave on the paper. You know,
and so
that definitely happens with me. I can't speak for all writers and storytellers, but it does happen with me. It happened with Rose. Happened with Lolly, of course. And you know, there's some different. You know, if you read the book, there's some kind of plot twists and different things that pop up that are kind of unexpected, that which were very difficult for me to write and for me to tell as a storyteller, you know, because it just, like you said, it's hurtful. And a lot of times when I'm sitting here writing right now, I'm sitting in my home office where I do a lot of my writing. You know, it's kind of almost kind of like channeling to some degree, which is, you know, kind of a cliche thing to say, I guess, as a writer. But, you know, I feel a lot of those emotions that the characters are feeling, and I try to put those down, right, on paper or electrons. And it does take a toll, you know.
You know, I got to say, without spoiling it for anyone who hasn't read it yet, the ending you placed in this book, I felt where the story was going to end. Like, it was going to be this, like, great, victorious, all right, yay, Lolly, you're amazing, this is awesome. And the turn it takes hurts. I don't know if that is some of what you're saying, too, about the leaving those tiny deaths of yourself on the page. But to have the family, to pull the family together through a lot of the things they were struggling with, and where I think Mom and maybe even Lolly fears his trajectory may be going if he follows in his brother's footsteps or in the influence of that some of the members of the community want to pull him into, where you go with Legos, with all of these Legos, with, I can't say anymore because I really deeply don't want to spoil this ending, but I felt like it was such a good, unexpected and powerful scene. I wonder, maybe without going into too much detail, if that was a scene that you had from the start of setting out to write this novel. Did you have the ending in mind before you were writing? Or is that something that came, that like showed itself as you were working your way through Lolly's story?
Well, you know, there are several twists that occur, you know, so, you know, obviously I can't, you know, if I ask you which twist specifically you're talking,
it's all of them, David. David, I like this book so much that I barely even wanted to mention that there's a character named Rose and that she meets Lolly and they have like a camaraderie together. There's so much here that I feel like is so sacred and beautiful that I want people just to like experience first on their own. That's where I hold your story. I just want you to hear that from me. That's what this was for me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're very kind. But yeah, you know, I do, going into it, I did kind of know the beginning, middle, and end, you know. Okay. Overall, that was, you know, thought out and planned out. But there is kind of a particularly gut-wrenching twist that occurs towards the end that came about after I had written the first draft, you know, and I was kind of... going through the plot and trying to kind of suss out different things. And I kind of had a revelation about an interaction that two of the characters would have had, you know, in the past. And so that was, that specifically was something that was added. And it was very difficult. Cool. It was difficult for me to add that because it's very painful.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, like I said, I felt a little bit of that pain for that character and those characters. I was add when I added that specific, you know, plot point.
Ooh, one of the amazing plot points. I want to tie this in because I saw that there's like a there's a movie that's being made, adapted, whatever the word is. Like The Stars Beneath Our Feet is being cast and being made a movie. That is amazing.
Yes, so it is.
Congratulations on that. There is a particular scene as I was reading. You're still reading when you listen to an audiobook. It's reading. Anyway,
yeah,
as I was reading, there's a particular scene with a friend that comes back in who has made a choice that Lolly has been struggling with reoccurring throughout the story. And there's a scene that takes place by that by the water.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, ugh, that is a movie scene. And then I read on Twitter or something, or Facebook or something, it's going to be a movie. And I was like, yes, that is going to be the scene in all the trailers. It's going to be amazing. Anyway, you wrote a cinematic book. It's awesome. And so congratulations on that. But,
Yeah, you know, I actually went to that very spot as I was writing the book. A friend of mine and I actually walked to that particular spot near the Harlem River. Is where it is. And I have a photograph of myself standing there that I show when I go around the country talking to different groups of kids and different people. You know, I have a slideshow that I show, and that's one of the photographs that I show of me standing there at that exact spot where that moment occurs, you know. And so, hopefully, I mean, I guess, or probably there will be some film crews there, you know, in a year from now or whenever it is, you know, shooting that as that occurs. And that'll be a really special moment for me, kind of watching that come to life. And, you know, so.
Maybe that'll be like the spot where you get to make your cameo, like a person like driving in a car past the whatever or what, wherever the little cameos that the authors get to pop in. That's like a thing, right? That has to be a thing. That's a thing.
I guess the thing is, you know, whenever I go around talking about it, whenever I go around talking about the book, you know, the kids, once they find out that Michael B. Jordan is going to be directing it, they always ask me, you know, okay, so what role are you playing in the movie? And I'm you know, like, well, maybe I'll be like the cashier at McDonald's or something. Or I'll be like in the background, I'll yell out like, watch out, get down, you know.
I like that. That'll be perfect.
That would be the extent. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome that it's going to go that direction and that we have this beautiful book and all these great things are happening around the story. I wanted to ask though, because you mentioned that you were a teacher, at one point, maybe you still teach. I'm not sure what you do by day, if writing is your focus, but I wanted to go back to what you taught. What were you teaching when you were in Harlem?
I taught ELA, English Language Arts, and I was a pretty bad teacher.
Oh, no.
I don't think I was very bad. Although I did hear, you know, I actually taught at a middle school in Harlem. My very first day there, I actually had to kind of stand, I had to prevent a child from throwing a desk on top of the head of another child, you know. Ooh, so I was... Yeah. Kind of standing there holding the desk on one side and he was holding the desk on the other side. And there's this girl beneath us, you know, and he was literally trying to squash her head with this desk. And I was kind of calling out for help, you know, and that was the first day. And of course I was like, well, is this really what I should be doing?
Did you show up for a second day? You showed up for a second day though.
All right. I did a whole semester. I did.
It was human great, shield. Know. And you came back for a semester. There you go.
Yeah, but I was told, you know, when I left there, the administrator told me, because I didn't think I was very well liked by the kids, because I think they thought I was too much of a disciplinarian, and, But a couple of the administrators there said that the kids had remarked that they would miss me, which I was extremely surprised to find out, because I was, you know, I think when I walked down the hallway, people just, the kids just kind of sneered at me, because I was kind of a no fun Mr. Discipline.
Oh, my word. We are talking. I told you, we are talking on this day that is my most challenging day of teaching of the week.
Oh, yes.
And I have that. And I have that feeling of like, oh, you don't like me very much, do you? And it hurts my ego a little bit sometimes where I'm like, this is hard to know that like while you're with me, you're like rolling your eyes, not joining me in the group, not participating, doing whatever you think you want to do. But I'm also new at this school. It's my first year at this school. And you just know that, like, you spent a semester with these kids. The fact that you stayed, you showed them that you weren't going anywhere, that semester you were there with them, that kind of consistency and showing up, it takes time. It takes a long time to build trust. So it sounds like as you were leaving, you were starting to see those buds of trust. And so I think just, well, as you know, from writing this book as well and from working with children, sometimes they just don't know how to show it. They don't know quite how to express it. They're mixed balls of emotion. They don't know what to do with themselves.
It's fun for me to kind of put myself back in that headspace, you know, as a writer.
I bet. Because somewhere in all of this, you were drawn to write this story. Have you been drawn to storytelling and to writing for a time?
My whole life.
Wow, your whole life. And did you write as a child too, like elementary school, high school? Were you writing stories yourself?
Oh yeah, I was. I started off drawing and sketching, which I still do, you know, but obviously early elementary, I would doodle and draw and actually came up with, created these different kind of worlds as children do, you know, of just kind of characters and stories, kind of similar to the way that my character in the Stars Beneath Our Feet does, where he kind of dreams up these stories about this kind of science fiction kingdom, right?
Yeah.
Made out of Legos. And so I was doing very similar things when I was in elementary school and then writing things down in sketchbooks. And I have all those books, those sketchbooks. And so
and you show those, I bet, or you show images of them during your presentations, I'm sure. Man, seeing stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and you could see the progression from basically, you know, images and cartoons and sketches to like bits of dialogue to outlines to short stories to, you know, see it over the years. And even when I was in prep school, you know, in between classes, I would sometimes, or very often, I would just stop and take down notes in a little tiny notebook that I carried with me, you know. And now most of that is in the iPad today.
Yeah, but still, it's a habit you kept up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've always been a storyteller. You know, today I'm I only write and I only make films. That's all I do.
Okay.
And so I feel very blessed to be doing that, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's about telling, we're trying to tell the best stories that I can tell.
I believe that. I'm sure you're well on your way to writing the next novel or the novel after that. How is that process going for you?
Well, yeah, I don't know about well on the way.
I'm on my way. A writer, I know that all these things are relative. I myself write, and I know that sometimes the majority of the writing I do is in my head as I am working through what is this idea? How can I articulate it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and I really wish, you know, I'm writing a second middle grade novel, which is very similar to The Stars Beneath Our Feet, similar as far as tone and, you know, and setting and whatnot and characterizations, but it's a completely different story with a different character, you know. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm fairly well into it. You know, it's just the whole book tour thing slowed me down a lot with it. You know, I really wish I had finished the second book before the book tour started, because between that and all the stuff with the film and you know, all the other things, the appearances, you know.
Yeah, it broke your momentum, I'm sure, a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm the type of person where, you know, I have a fairly good mind for business. And I also have a fairly good kind of creative mind, I think, right? But they're kind of separate. And, you know, so the business stuff sometimes can derail the creative side of my brain, you know? So things have slowed down now. It's the holidays, and so I'm getting back into it. I'm also continuing with writing the screenplay for the film adaptation.
No, I did not know you were involved in that way. Awesome.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very unusual for an author.
Because of your experience as a filmmaker, this is something that they obviously looked at, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you have to audition for the screenplay writer?
Well, you know, I did write the first 20 pages, and that was just my own. That was my own decision that I made. Okay. You know, I was not asked to do that, but it was something. Yeah, you know, I did want to write the screenplay because I've placed in two large national screenplay competitions, and I, like you said, I have a background as a filmmaker. I still make movies, so yeah. So I guess it was good enough to get that.
So far. I guess it was good enough to get. You know, the screenplay of a major motion picture.
but so I'm working on the second book, and I'm also nice. Gonna be next year I'm gonna be working on a Superman graphic novel, actually. For DC Comics for teenagers, so it's YA novel.
Congratulations, that's awesome.
So, and I'm a big geek. I've been reading comic books since I was like, gosh, I think 5.
I was going to say, how does one get involved in writing for the DC universe?
Well, you know, that was an audition. That was nice. They approached my agent, you know, and asked if I was interested in, you know, writing anything about using any of their heroes, you know. And so I pitched them two different ideas, and they really fell in love with the Superman take. So I'm very excited about. Very excited about it, actually. I think it'll be a very different take on Superman, and you know, I'm looking forward to starting on it once I get the screenplay finished and some headway on the next middle grade novel.
Yeah, you got stuff going on, man. Congratulations, though. It sounds like good stuff, but I'm sure it's a little different from the time when you were writing The Stars Beneath Our Feet. There's a couple more plates spinning, it sounds like.
Oh my God, yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing about when I was writing that is, you know, I wrote a big chunk of it, an initial draft, right? And then I was working for, I had a job, I'll say. I won't say with whom, but it just wasn't a good fit, you know, and so I really wanted to kind of leave that particular job that I had, you know? It was something, a new position. And, so that really encouraged me to finish The Stars Beneath Our Feet very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, I kind of took a long time for me to kind of get it started and get it to a certain position. But then once that, you know, all hell broke loose on the job, I was like, oh my gosh, let me hurry up and finish this.
It was the right motivation. I like that.
Yeah, I was very motivated to complete it.
Well, yeah. Listen, you wrote a gorgeous book. And there were things we didn't even talk about. I love just... one of the things I loved, just to share it, is that Lolly has two moms. Lolly's mom is gay, and I love that was just a thing. It wasn't like the story centered around, or that wasn't part of what he was. I don't know. That wasn't part of what he was trying to come to terms with in the story. I'll put it that way. I like how that was just matter of fact in Lolly's life. There were different components of the story that I felt like there were so many things you dropped in that just sort of existed. You're saying that you were like not rushing to finish Stars Beneath Our Feet, but you were motivated to finish Stars Beneath Our Feet. But yet it feels like you just spent years getting to know these characters and their world. So maybe I'll leave it at that I really love all of these little details you chose.
Thank you very much. I mean, I live in New York City, particularly in Brooklyn, and I've lived here a very long time. And you know, I love New York. It's of course probably the most diverse location on the planet. Yeah. You know, I think Queens is actually the most diverse location on the planet. Let alone the other four boroughs. And one of the things I love about New York City is you encounter just so many different types of folk here, you know. And that's one of the things that I wanted to kind of relate in The Stars Beneath Our Feet, is because it's a very New York book. You know, they travel around. There's New York architecture featured. There's even some cameos, or at least one cameo from a kind of a famous New York person.
Yeah.
you know. And... but yeah, New York is one of those cities where you could be at the gym, and you know, on one side you could have like a stockbroker on the the treadmill running next to you. On the other side, you could have a prince or something, you know, it's, you know, and they could, you could all go out for coffee afterwards. So it's just one of those places where you just meet all these different types of people, and it's very diverse and interesting. Yeah. And I love it. And that's, so yeah, that pops up in the book, that, that quality, I think, of living in the Big Apple, I think.
I thought that, that quality, as well as, and I like that there was a note, I know at least at the end of the audiobook, there's a note about this, from you actually, about the voice of the characters, that you took some liberties to try to capture Lolly's voice, and that you mentioned that sort of, I forget how you said it, just that you hope you got it right. That you were, I could tell that you were listening to these children that you were working with, and still acknowledging on the book, though, that that turns of phrase change so rapidly that they're already out of date as soon as you put them in a book.
Yeah.
But
one of the things with kids, and particularly in Harlem, you know, but I guess all over, is this vernacular slang, non-standard English, you know, changes so rapidly, you know, particularly nowadays with social media, you know, turns of phrase and catchwords and things that, you know, they come and go so quickly. And so I knew immediately that with this book, which has so much kind of vernacular and slang in it, I knew by the time it would be published, a lot of the words would be kind of antiquated, you know. And so there is a part in the author's note in the book where I talk about that, and I talk about wanting to, you know, to relate something a little bit larger than just the moment. You know, I was really aiming to write something that people would be able to appreciate and read and get something out of, you know, many, many years from now after I'm gone. You know, that was one of my goals. I'm not sure if I achieved that or not, but that was definitely what I was trying to do, you know. And so in the author's note, I think I did mention the fact that to some of the kids in Harlem who are going to read it, and they'll say something like, oh, that word went out of style like, you know, a year ago or whatever. you know, it's a mixture of different things. It's like an homage, you know. Yeah. In a lot of ways, you know, Harlem is a metaphor for blackness in a lot of ways, you know. So I really wanted to create something that was kind of an homage to that, and the way that black folk speak.
Well, I think you did right by those kids that you met in Harlem, the kids that you worked with. I feel like you did right by your readers for what you've shown us in this story, the way you've portrayed New York. I think every aspect of this story is really well thought out and really well executed, David. And I sure am glad that it reached me and that I had a chance to read it. And also that you had time to talk tonight. I appreciate all of that. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. I'm very glad that it reached you as well, you know, and I appreciate you, talking with me and sharing this on your podcast and getting the word out to more people, because it's you know, it's a very, very special project for me.
Well, before we go, I'm going to give you last word on the podcast to speak to those readers, the readers that you're meeting across the country, the readers that you meet through them reading your book, all of those things. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow, David. Is there a message that I could bring to them from you?
Yeah, I guess. And the short message would be make the library your home. That would be the short message. And hopefully you don't get kids actually trying to sleep overnight in the library. But that would be the message. Because I know when I was their age, that's what I did. You know, we had a very strong library system in St. Louis County, and my mother would drop me off there, and it was like an escape. You know, it was an amazing world filled with all these kind of amazing friends and amazing adventures. And it really helped me grow and help my imagination grow. And so that would be in this world where we have all these different options at our fingertips. I guess my advice would be to seek out the libraries, you know, and make those libraries your home. That would be my advice.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 400 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books they'll love. Our theme music is composed by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I would love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast through Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.